Better late than never. This is the Supernatural Substation in New Orleans on the United Public Radio Network. I'm your co-host, Eileen Pastaneo, and sitting in the peanut gallery, as usual, is Bernadine. Say hello, Bernadine.
What is up, people?
Hi. We hanging and all that. Showing how old we are, Dean. We're showing how old we are. Yeah. For those of you who are keeping track, it is the 11th of November, 2017. That's 11-10-2017. And so let's just get on with it. This show is dedicated to Mr. W.S. Lewis, whoever you are on YouTube, okay? You want to skip the 31 minutes of bullshit, that's fine. It's okay. Usually our 31 minutes of bullshit prior to the guest has to do with the subject of the guest. So, but that's okay. You can start listening at what, like, you know, 32? It's okay with us. But tonight, you're going to have to listen to us the whole way because it's just Bernadine and I and Zeke. Everybody don't like Zeke. He doesn't care. Yeah, so I was perusing the YouTube channel, which everybody really should go and like and share and whatever. And we have a grumper, and then we have a grumper who's like this, you know, supporting the grumper, saying, "Yeah, skip the first 30." Well, you know, I mean, you're skipping the best part. You know, you're skipping the best part. It's us. You're skipping. Actually, there's a reason. I'm not going to make an excuse for why we do that, but we usually do talk about some good subjects. Yeah, we might kid around for 30 minutes or so, you know, because we're just lightening up. We don't take ourselves so seriously, you know, that we're going to start talking about, oh, I don't know, you know, quantum measurements and, you know, I don't know, down to the ounce of whatever and, you know, ghost etchings on a wall. I have no, you know, whatever. Okay. It's, I mean, we love to have you listen, but, you know, there's a reason for it and you shouldn't be disappointed because there's all a reason and a purpose. So, you know what today is, Bernadine?
No.
Other than being Friday, it is the 242nd birthday of the U.S. Marines.
Oh, yeah.
Semper Fi and all that other kind of stuff. My daughter was in the Navy. Yeah. But anyway, happy birthday to the Marines. And I know I actually had a Marine make a joke to me and my daughter about being the Navy being the ride for the Marines. You know, so I was like, yeah, remember your air support and stuff. It's usually Navy before it's Air Force. But anyway, happy birthday to some tough guys. Everybody that I knew that has gone into the Marines came back seriously changed from and went into combat seriously changed. They are our first line of defense and they pay the price for it. Also, this is Veterans Day weekend, which I'll be celebrating with my daughter. And thank you for serving your country, all veterans out there. Any age and any conflict, and even if you didn't go and fight. And tomorrow they got free meals, you know, excuse me, for veterans all over the place. So, like, that's we're, like, awesome. Trying to coordinate how we can get, like, breakfast and then lunch and dinner and dinner for free, you know.
No, yeah, all free. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some places like Dunkin' Donuts. You get a donut and a cup of coffee. It's like, all right, you know. So if we get that donut and a cup of coffee, we'll go over to Krispy Kreme. We get one more donut and then we're set, right? So it's two donuts. Anyway, yeah, we were actually kind of like planning it out. There were some that had the stuff, you know, stuff going on today, but they didn't. Some of them mostly are tomorrow, like Texas Roadhouse, which is a favorite of ours that we like. And they have a lunch tomorrow. So, like I said, we're going to be out. So we had a guest and she was overcome by some whatever, all the stuff that was going on in her life. So she kind of bailed on us, which is, you know, it's all right. We understand. So we decided that we were going to discuss with her, and she had several books out. She will be rescheduled, but probably in the new year. She was going to talk about spirit attachment, right, Bernadine?
Yes, ma'am.
And just spirit attachments. I mean, I saw she did some fiction too, but you know, now we're left with the subject. And so we decided that, hey, W.S. Lewis, we're going to talk about the subject.
Because we know we're about the subject.
That's right. Because I wrote, hey, who wrote the book? I wrote a book about them.
That's right.
I were ragging on him, but you know, whatever. It's fun. Don't become our mascot. Don't do that. Anyway, so I kind of expanded it when we thought about it. I was thinking about, you know, hauntings in general. And also portals came to mind, you know, and the susceptibility of certain people to attachments, et cetera. So with that in mind, I guess, where do you want to start, Bernadine? Or do you have some notes that you want to start with?
Well, I can give you my take on the spirit attachment thing when it comes to addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, let me just kind of back it up a little bit. Okay. In my book, Risks, Incidental, Supernatural Dangers of Paranormal Exploration, I explain the importance of keeping a healthy spirit, a healthy immune system, avoiding external triggers, avoiding stress. It's weird, but everything can stress us out, and anything could make us susceptible, from the death of a family member, as bad as that is, to, you know, getting pissed off in traffic, you know, and having one of your stops be, I don't know, the cemetery to go put flowers or something. We're just buffeted every day by stuff that wears us down, wears our protection, quote unquote, which would be our aura, down, and causes it to get unhealthy. And just like when your immune system is suppressed and you get the crud or you get the flu and you're more susceptible to it, same thing with your spirituality or your spirit body, which should stay healthy on its own. And Dean mentioned addiction as one of the really tough ones and a real hallmark of spirit attachment. So why don't you explain what spirit attachment is, though, Dean? I mean, you know, so everybody knows where we're talking.
Well, spirit attachment to me, from what I've researched on it and the people I've dealt with that actually had spirit attachments, especially with addiction, I feel earthbound spirits, that means spirits that do not cross over when they die, that had addiction problems, anger problems, depression, suicidal thoughts, you know, just their reason for sticking to the earth and not crossing over and going and staying around people that have these same problems, people that are susceptible. And like, say, for addiction, you know, if the person may have died of addiction or had an addiction when they died, they may gravitate towards people with the same problem because they can actually, in their attachment to that person, feel the high, whatever drug the person is using, or even alcohol, you know, if they were alcoholic. They can actually attach to that person and feel the high. And in my theory, that's the little bug in your ear when you're coming down or detoxing off of something, you know, is to go get more, go get more, go get more, because the spirit needs more. Mm-hmm. And the only way to break free from that is actually, you know, go into rehab if you have to, do what you have to do to get off the drugs or the drinks or whatever you have to do, because that spirit will not stick with that person because that person no longer has what it needs. Mm-hmm. And it'll go to the next one that's open to it.
Well, yeah.
That's my theory, you know.
And that's true for basically every, well, not across the board, but it's a generic truth. Like I watch, sometimes I watch staying in the addiction groove here. I watch Intervention sometimes.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's sad, yeah. You know, and it's sad to a certain degree. I'm not going to, just on a non-paranormal or supernatural level, what I look at in that program is those are some of the most selfish people I have ever seen. And it just, it gets me angry I guess the soapbox moment here, that they would put their families through what they do, you know, that it's all about them. It's all about their addiction. It's all about, you know, whatever, and everybody's got to put up with it. I don't know that I would. You know, I mean, I don't know that I could do that. You know, I'd say, look, you know, there's a flop house waiting for you somewhere. I mean, what can you, but aside from that, there are several episodes, and I'm sure you've seen them, where, you know, once someone gets really addicted to the street drugs, you know, they'll do anything, unfortunately, you know, whatever, they'll sell their body.
Of detox.
Right. Yeah. And they don't want to feel dope sick. And there was one where a mother of the girl who they were featuring and a friend were looking for the girl. And they went to the spots where the friend knew or pretty much had an idea where the girl was, would go to use. And, you know, they walked into this like abandoned building that was like, I don't know, an auto repair shop. And there was an apartment upstairs. And they walked in on this like field of just syringes and dirt and trash and, you know, just the burnt spoons, you know, everything, all of the terrible things that go along with that. And so walking into a place like that, that kind of a place is where the kind of spirit that you're talking about would linger and be attracted to. Someone who died of an addiction, or, you know, even somebody who was addicted and got in a wreck, you know, and then found themselves dead, they will gravitate to areas like that to get their vicarious, you know, their vicarious fix off of the individuals. So walking into a place like that, it's full of spirit pollution, especially if it's being used regularly, you know, by people who are just going to an out of the way place, using it as somewhere to just go, you know, shoot up or whatever, you know. And so you're walking, it's probably as dangerous as walking into, you know, I don't know, maybe a shark, you know, feeding frenzy, because really these are, and the instances of this, you know, a lot of times we talk about Dr. Wicklund, Carl August Wicklund, who wrote, you know, 30 Years Among the Dead, but he wrote it in 1924. And prior to that, it was 30 years of research prior to that. But even as far back as the turn of the century and an actual serious investigation, there are stories about just what we're talking about. You know, let's just say a man gets involved, a man of good standing in, you know, I think it was in Chicago, this particular story, got involved with a woman from the wrong side of the tracks. That's what they would call it then. And she developed an addiction to laudanum, and which is opium or an opiate, and, you know, morphine, and she died. And he went back to his family, or actually, I think I may be skipping a step, that he was married. And I think he was fooling around with the woman and she died. Then all of a sudden, within, you know, I don't know, a year or so after that she died, he began to withdraw from his family. He actually left his family and went and got an apartment on the wrong side of town, in the trashy apartment, and lived there. And didn't know why, and had no explanation for just abandoning his life the way that he did. And it turned out that the girlfriend had been attached to him, was attaching to him. And not only, mostly what she was getting was a pleasure of ruining his life, but under hypnosis, found out he developed an alcohol problem, you know, and he was doing drugs on, you know, where he had left. So, I mean, it's old. It's as long as there have been spirits that have died from stuff like that. And there are people that are using stuff like that, anything, alcohol, sex, gambling, lust, whatever. There's going to be spirits that are going to prey on those people. And drug addicts have no way, no defense. They have no way to put up a defense between themselves and any kind of predatory spirit. You know, so naturally what would follow on the drugs is what we'd have. Certain kind of, you know, evil discarnates that never were or whatever, you know, never were human. And then you begin to get the spirit pollution that we talk about so often in our lectures, etc. You begin to get that, you know, that sort of rubbernecking cluster, you know what, and you've got, you know, a spirit nightmare going on. You've got a person stuck in, you know, hell, basically, and being preyed on by things that he can't see. It's hard, you know, and then people say, well, you know, you need to, you know, you need to separate the human, the person from the addiction. Well, there comes a point where supernaturally you can't. There's no way to do it. And the only way for them to get out of it is, has been, to commit to rehab, et cetera. But, you know, when I'm looking at it, at intervention, I also think some of these people ought to be put under. They ought to be put under with, you know, with a hypnotist, and they ought to draw the personalities forward that are stuck on them and help them to move on. You know, if they could do that, that would be, you know, I'm sure there's psychiatrists, et cetera, that are okay with doing that. I mean, you just don't hear it, but it would be a good way of treating, you know, addiction. And not as good television, or maybe more, maybe Destination America, huh?
Right.
A new show on Destination America. But average people, right? Average people can get attachments too. You can get them in the weirdest places. You can go to the grocery store and you walk over where somebody died at the grocery store. I mean, I don't mean to be laughing, you know, but speaking of death and dying, cemeteries, and especially, you know, the people who have just buried a loved one are, you know, obviously beacons to what is in, what is living in the cemetery and what is preying on people there. So they're like, you know, 24 hours open. I don't mean to laugh, but, you know, this is, that's like just honey to them, especially if the grief is prolonged and they go back to the cemetery a lot, you know, and they sit by the grave and all that. I mean, mourning is mourning, but you have to see the end of it. You know, when you can't, I mean, you do seriously need to get help, mental help, but, you know, spiritual help as well.
Even the depression, the depression can cause an attachment because you're weak.
Yeah. And then, you know,
it makes you vulnerable.
It, you know, that, and I have a section on that called The Role of Grief. And it, when someone dies, a loved one or whatever, you know, the relationship it is, it puts you into these places, hospitals, probably, you know, maybe hospitals or hospice situation. And then, you know, passes away, whoever that might be. And suddenly you're dealing with funeral homes and, you know, coroner maybe, or, you know, depending on the manner of death, et cetera. And you got to go through the whole funeral, the burial, the cemetery, you know, and it's a really kind of a long road just to get through. But sometimes people get lost, you know, on that road, and they keep going back, you know, and crying at the grave and all. And I'm not going to say that that's not cathartic for the person, but it's not good for their mental health or for their spiritual health. Because that kind of unending grief will draw something to you that you're not, you know, that you may mistake then as just more depression, or, you know, or it may come to you and claim to be something it's not, your dead husband, your dead child, or whatever it is, you know. I mean, and then stories about that go back in every, you know, basically every cultural folklore has stories of grief, situations of extreme grief, bringing the dead back. And it's usually not a good thing. There's one, there's a British legend, and it revolves around something called the demon lover. And basically what it is a couple, the boy, the man goes off to war. He's, you know, they don't hear from him. He's thought to be missing in action. The spouse or the female, the fiance or whoever it is crying into, you know, all day and night. And then finally she hears his horse return, or depending on what time of, you know, wherever the thing is cast, either in modern times or, you know, then. And she runs down, she jumps on the horse with him, he rides off, she puts her arms around him, and she's beginning to notice how cold he is and how frigid. And the next thing you know, the horse is jumping over the wall of a cemetery. And basically what she had done, and then the grave opens up and into it they go, and he takes her with him. And that, if there, that's a cautionary tale right there, because you're crying and you're pining something back, you know, you're not letting it go. And that's an extreme example, but it can happen with your relatives, that you're crying and then they stay sometimes to make you feel better and let you know that they're there. And so you're hurting yourself and your spirit, and you're hurting the spirit of the loved one that needs to pass on. They become a ghost. They become attached to you by grief, you know. So it's a serious situation. It's something that, you know, you have to be mindful of. And we all have to come into those situations in life, dealing with death, dealing with people who might be alcoholics or some other kind of addict. And, you know, at some point it becomes a choice. Are you going to be with this person, spend time with this person? You know, because you know how much grief and depression, and then setting yourself, you know, withdrawing from society. The other road is, and you can talk about this, trying to communicate, i.e. the Ouija board and everything.
I was fixing to say that.
As
especially, you know, working in the paranormal, when we lose a loved one and we're so used to communicating with other people's loved ones, it is very hard. And I could say from experience, I haven't done it because I'm smart, mm-hmm. but I really would advise against trying to communicate with your loved one.
Yeah.
You know, via EVP or any type of spirit communication. And it's very hard because you want to hear that voice again. You know, mm-hmm. you want to see that spirit. You want to have that hug. You want all these things because you miss them so bad. You're still grieving. I mean, we're people just like everybody else, mm-hmm. except we have the equipment to do so.
Yeah.
And it's tempting. It's very tempting.
Very much.
But, very much, you yeah. know, I advise against it because you don't actually know that that's your loved one you're talking to. If you're in grief, you're vulnerable, just like anyone else that would go to a graveyard, you know, for years with that grief. Mm-hmm. You're vulnerable. So you don't know if you're going to bring something in by trying to. Well, what yeah. I tell my investigators and any investigator that'll ask me, never do an investigation in your own home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you got stuff flying across the room.
Repeat that. Never. Never. Do it in your own home.
I have never. And I have spirits in my home, you know, and I know I have loved ones come here and visit and give me messages, this and this and this and this. I have all the equipment to use, but I have mm-hmm. never done an investigation in my home because there's a difference. And people ask me, well, why not? Here's why not. Because when we go into a client's home, we don't have the emotion that the clients would have. Like, say, if they would see an apparition of their loved ones, that emotion is like strong. So that leaves them vulnerable. What if it's not their loved one, you know? Mm-hmm. But in your own home, you have that strong emotion. So living here, you know, living in your own home as an investigator, if you call something up, like say your loved one or whatever, the emotion automatically comes in. I mean, it's a normal human reaction. Mm-hmm. And that energy that the emotion brings can open up this portal thing, you know, and just yeah. flood in the spirits just because you're upset because you heard the voice.
Well, you know, and it makes you a target for everything else, you know?
Yeah, because in an investigation, we go into it like a job because right. we're going there to help other people with their problem.
Well, everybody should treat it like a job. Right. Yeah. It should treat that like a job and treat it respectably and, you know, professionally insofar, because otherwise it's, you know, really it's this aggrandized hobby, you know, is really what it is. Like, you know, but if you are able to do the research and keep that professional, more people will come to you and then more people will hear about you. And, you know, it's setting a personal standard, but you know, the house I grew up in, said, you know, the house in East New Orleans that I grew up in, I write about it again in Risks. And, I didn't need anybody. I didn't need EVPs. And mm-hmm. my mom was doing all of that crap, though. You know, she was doing it with cassette recorders and stuff. I mean, it was like primitive, but she was doing exactly what Hans Holzer and Lorraine Warren and them were doing in our house. Okay. And then she was doing other stuff like, you know, meditation and getting cards read. And I mean, it was just like this whole, you know, just stop this new age crap, you know?
So that you as a child, you experienced a lot of things because of that.
It's a terrible. Yeah. And then, which is another reason why I live in a house and that's where you have to have peace, you know? That's another reason why I don't ever do this stuff in your house. Why would you want to do it? You know, yeah, it's a good, you know, there may be something around, you know, now and then. There may be some, you may end up in a house that, you know, like the, you know, we lived in one in the middle of town that was 103 years old, you know, and it was haunted. You know, you stayed there a couple of times. And it was haunted. My dad used to see ghosts and, you know, I saw the ghost of, it wasn't a frightening haunt until it kind of got to be we got a little bit more familiar to him and then something else was coming. But, you know, we moved out because of my dad's death. It didn't cause his death or anything like that. But the point is the last place you want is to bring stuff like that into your home. The effects are, it's like bringing a completely, you know, like a serial killer into your house or some maniac, you know, into your, it really is. It can throw your house into such and your family into such disarray. And paranormal researchers, I know what you do, but a lot of them don't even stop to think of that, you know, and
all this emotion and drama.
Well, they go in and they do their stuff and then they just come home too. Or they think, here's an example. So they're going to go to a paranormal convention and talk around people, okay, and meet people who have done stuff like, you know, done investigations in their house, who claim that they're, you know, psychic and whatever, and they're talking to spirits in their house, stolen stuff from haunted sites. And the list goes on. And you're, you know, pressing the flesh and cheek to cheek with these people, and you don't even, it doesn't even occur to you that, you know, you go home and, you know, next thing you know, you've got problems in your house. It's like constantly being aware of it. It's like being almost like a corrections officer, you know? It's like, mm-hmm. You want to keep them in their cells. You know what I mean? It's like, so you're going to go and you're going to help people, but you're also going to, you know, keep up this, the protection of yourself from this other stuff. I mean, I don't need somebody to come in the house and do an investigation and tell me that where I lived was haunted, that I've had hauntings since then. And I've had fetches sent after me and all kind of other stuff. Nobody has to tell me that. I know it. But why would I don't know, just go on, let's say, you know, the upstairs investigation or whatever, you know, why go there and bring all of that home? You know, I don't know, because the price to pay is high. And people don't stop to think about it. If they think, oh, it's just one little baby ghost, it's a girl, it's a little girl. Well, you know, it may not be, but if it is, she's probably got some other ones with her. They don't have that much to do, honestly. I mean, it's plain and simple. You know, it's like if they are lingering around, they're doing it for a reason, you know, and it's far better to, when a loved one dies, like your sister or my dad, it's far better to wait and be attentive to their message to you, because almost invariably, unless it was a bad situation, the dead will come back in one way or another. They will get a message to you, or they will come back as a comfort and help you cross that point, you know, where you say, well, you know, I know that was her, or I know that was him, and I can feel better about it, you know? And if that doesn't come for you, then obviously you may need some counseling, you may need some grief therapy, but you may also need to be aware that this is affecting your psychic health. I mean, your health, rather. This is affecting you on the psychic level, and, you know, your life could take a left turn to, you know, into the unknown before you know it.
Right.
Sorry, I was drinking something. Sorry, W.S. Lewis, I was drinking something. Bernadine knows me. But I was also looking, you know, spirit cognizance and stuff. And there are all sorts of things that, you know, that go into this. A spirit wanting to escape. I'm looking in my book now, but I'm also quoting from Dr. Wicklund's 30 Years Among the Dead. A spirit wanting to escape its condition, which is it's stuck in the etheric, in the outlaw country, by trying to go to sleep, and spirits around are bothering him. Affecting the circumstances of the living in a negative manner. And that's the story that I just told you about the man in Chicago, turn of the century, you know, spirits and crime. We often, you know, we talk about addicts, but criminals too. Criminals, right, when they die, especially if they die unrepentant in their mind. I'm not saying religion now. I'm just saying unrepentant and still engaged in that kind of activity, and they really, you know, they really are the criminal personality. Those are the ones that will make your life hell. You know, so people, you know, people go to places like prisons, you know, Moundsville or Ohio Reformatory, all these prisons, you know, what is it, the Eastern State, you know, and, you know, I mean, team after team after team has gone through there. And I, you know, I think maybe, you know, I don't know what, 8 out of 10 go back and they have things happen, you know, and they think that's cool until, you know, I don't know about you, Dean, but I don't want a murderer in my house. I sure as hell don't want the ghost of a murderer in my house, right?
Yeah, we have enough in our family.
That's right. Yeah, I got enough to worry about. I mean, you can't shoot a ghost, right? You can't, I don't want some, you know, lifer from Moundsville Penitentiary or wherever up in my house, because I just wanted to go be, you know, I want to go put my jeans and my black t-shirt on and play, like, you know, whatever. I don't. And some people say, yeah, that's kind of
crazy. I mean, if you're going in there to try to get the spirits to cross over or something, you know, I can understand, but to go in there just to talk to them, no.
Mm-mm. I think, like, something like an Alcatraz, like I would go to experience the experience. You know what I mean? I would go to these places because I have an interest in it, but to experience the atmosphere and the feel of it. Again, nobody needs to tell me if a place is haunted, and those places are haunted. And just to experience it, it's usually enough, you know, for me anyway. I don't have to talk to it. I don't have to. And you and I could be walking through just with a digital recorder on, and you will be guaranteed to hear stuff. They're going to talk to you. But when you interact with them, they fix on you. They have a fix. It's not this, you know, floaty sort of amorphous in living individuals moving in and out of their view. They, you know, sometimes they perceive us like ghosts. They see us through spirit eyes, then, like, we're the ghost to them, because a lot of there's a lot to support the fact that dead people, the spirits of the dead, you know, and we're just talking now criminals and everything else, but the spirits of our dead are fully aware on the other side and have a body that is, for all intents and purposes, as real to them as ours are here. So sometimes when they see these investigators, they see them as ghosts. These ghosts who are really in the etheric, and, you know, we're in the material reality, they get scared of us. And, yeah, you know,
we're the intruders.
Right. You've heard story after story over the years of the ghost being afraid, and it won't come out. And it's because to the ghost, you're the ghost, you know. It's, you know, and sometimes it's like, you know, like somebody once described, like, you know, every day at 11:30, you're sitting there watching the news or whatever. And, you know, this, you don't see it, but somebody opens a door, you hear footsteps, and they walk past you, you know. Well, how do you know that on the other side, you know, he's not telling whoever this is, every day I come home at 11:30, I walk through, and there they are, they're sitting in the middle of the living room with the TV on, so I go to the back. I mean, that's the reality of the, you know, of our reality. To them, their reality is their reality. And material reality, the ones that you're worried about is the ones that know they're in their reality, and they want to get into our reality because they don't want to be in their reality. And stories like that abound, you know, pets and stuff like that. So, I mean, I've never really understood this, you know, this wanting to go and you know, provoke spirits in places like prisons or, you know.
Yeah, do that.
I recently watched, this was, yeah, go ahead. I will watch that episode, whatever that was.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've seen it, you know, and yeah. These people, and there are people that do admit that they've made mistakes and, you know, they want to protect other people, but not a lot of them. And a lot of them don't even know that they're making the mistake that they're doing. You know, if they look behind them, they got like a net of dead people. What did you do? You know, what did you come in contact with? What did you steal? You know, but I watched on YouTube, I don't know, a few weeks ago, there's some, everybody's, you know, got a YouTube channel or whatever. There's some kids out there that do paranormal pranks. I think I'm going to have to send you the link. Or it's not actually a prank. It's like a dare. And so they got a lot of, apparently got a lot of comments telling them they wanted to, the people, the audience wanted to see them go to the suicide bars in Japan. And I know you've heard about it, right?
Yes.
So it's been known as a source, as a haunted place of death since like, oh, I don't know, the 9th century. Okay. Where the Japanese used to put their old people out in the woods and let them die, you know? So these morons, these kids, okay, they're kids. Literally, they're like, they're younger than my daughter. My daughter's 27. They are like right at like 20, 21 years old, old enough to travel on their own. And they went there and you know, they went there at sunset. I'll send you the link and y'all can look it up on YouTube. It is a really creepy place. It is a really haunted place. I would love to go there, but I'd love to go there with you, Dean. But like I said, you can have the digital recorder on. I'm just going to feel the atmosphere. So here are these four boys, right? And they go, they step into this, there's a path and you can go so far. And there's like another, like a path off of that, that during the day, it'll take you down to some caves and stuff like that, that, you know, they give regular tours through. But there's a barrier. It's not a big barrier. It's like just a, you know, a chain. And it says in Japanese, don't go any further, whatever. And so they do, they step over the chain and they go off into this thing. Oh, I don't know, dude. I don't know. Oh, dude, oh, look over there. Goodness. Oh, look, you know, and I'm talking to the screen because they're saying, they're
of course
saying,
we do that at our age.
Yeah. I'm like, you morons, don't come around me. No, but they're like, you know, so they're like the least prepared people that you ever, they're using the phone, the flashlight, quote unquote, on their phones. They're using regular little flashlights, right? Nobody went in there and got like extra batteries for anything or something. So, and they're backpacks. And I actually wrote a comment. Why don't you guys shut up? They talk constantly until one of them gets scared. All right. And when they shut up, and they're saying, dude, let's go over there. Dude, bro. I just want to smack them with a baseball hat. Like, shut up, okay? Listen to where you are. When they shut up, nothing. No sound. Nothing. And I've been, you know, looking at this forest, reading about it and everything, even talking to my Japanese friends about it or friend. And the thing is, it's alive and it's completely silent, and for the very first time, like you or I would be going down the path like this, that would be it. Mm-hmm. Not, hey, look over there, oh my god, I don't have a battery, you know, and all of this stuff. It was so overpowering, and the idea that that people that go in there to commit suicide at night, when, you know, they go into it in the day, and then night falls and it becomes this thing. And there's people sitting out there, you know, in the forest trying to contemplate whether to kill themselves, you know? So, and so they freak out and they're looking at these little ropes, you know, like traffic ropes or those little stretchy multicolored ropes or actually ribbons. It's more like ribbons. When they go in to get the bodies out, they use these ribbons to point, basically lead to the area they've covered and if they've discovered some, right? So these idiots, look, follow the path, stay between the ribbons, you know, and you want to just go earth to whatever, dude, bro, you're going to find something. And they did. one of the ribbon strings led to a tent. And sitting next to the tent, it really was kind of hazy and blurry because they're stupid. But it was basically a skull. You know, it was you could see the white already showing, sitting propped up against a tree, you know. So the Japanese in the 8th century, 8th and 9th century, said, don't go in there. They have the Yulin or something. I'm saying it wrong, sorry. But they're the spirits of the dead. They are the forest spirits on top of all of the other spirits. So these moronic kids, right, are running around here. They don't think, oh, I better do something. Oh, I better, you know, I better leave an offering.
No protection at all.
No protection. No idea of what to do when they leave. No idea of what's probably happened to them now, because they don't have anybody saying, hey, this is essentially a graveyard. Okay. Right. And you need
oh my God, it's probably the only prayer they knew that day, huh?
Right. Probably that and dude and bro. Dude, bro. They noticed going in there, which is interesting. They have a parking lot for the day, you know, the daytime goers. And there was a van, and having read about it, the police or the forest rangers will go. And sometimes if they see a vehicle sitting in the parking lot for, you know, a couple of weeks or whatever, and there was a van that apparently had been there for a while that these kids passed, and they thought that was cool and that was freaky and whatever. But it's sad because whoever parked that van went in there and killed themselves. And so it's essentially a graveyard, and it's like any other place. You know, you have to, everybody says, oh, respect the dead. Well, yeah, you got to respect the dead, but you've got to respect yourself. You've got to protect yourself. You can't go in there with this mindset of, oh, this is so fun. You know, it's.
Just think of the emotion that the people that committed the suicides were having at the time of their death.
Absolutely. And it is full of that. I've seen videos of people in there in the daytime, and even people finding remains in the daytime. And I'm sure there may be others, but I came across this one in the nighttime. It was indescribable. It was just absolute silence. It was like one big grave, and these idiot kids, they could have gotten lost. I mean, you know, the thing is at the foot of Mount Fuji, and it's almost like a horseshoe, like almost a full horseshoe around the base of it. And everything that grows in it grows on top of lava, you know, that had formed over the millennia. And then, you know, the trees are growing into this lava, and not all of them are solid place. Like you could be walking and then it'll give way and you'll fall between the trees and stuff like that. So it's dangerous. It's a well-known, you know, it's well-known to be a terrible, terribly haunted place and stuff. So, you know, here we got, I guess I want to go see, I think I followed one of them. I'm going to go check and see now what's new, you know, and I'm going to actually ask the guy maybe, you know, so how was that? Who'd you bring home from Japan? You know, because seriously, and that's on a big scale, because I wanted to kind of comment on how overwhelming the feeling was of just seeing it in silence and darkness. But people do that in cemeteries all over. People go to Marie Laveau's grave, you know, they go jumping over fences to try and go where the voodoo's, you know, or whatever, in Holt Cemetery.
Every day.
It doesn't have to be this, you know, this major, you know, the suicide forest is second only to the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco for the number of suicides per year. And by the time these guys made their video, there was something like 300 and something bodies had been pulled out of the forest already that year. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, and some of them, granted, they might be finding some they overlooked, but still, you know, it's not a place to go in the, and dude, you know.
And I can imagine the cursing and the bleeping that I can't deal with.
Yes, yeah, that you can't deal with, right? You know, and then there was one smart kid, and then the other thing that I probably couldn't deal with was they'd be walking along, and all of a sudden, you know, some dude that's a spider web. They had, oh gosh, they had a spider web that looked like It looked like Vampire's house. I mean, this thing was like
Oh,
this,
gosh.
and they had this spider sitting in the middle of it. That you, I mean, he probably started out like a normal banana spider, whatever the hell he was, but this spider was huge. And the only way they saw it was that it was reflecting on their light. And then they said, oh my God, it's a big spider. So, I mean, yeah, that's creepy. Yeah, that's kind of creepy fun if you're into that stuff. But are you going to wipe the dirt off your feet? Are you going to leave something for the spirits? I think, you know, like if you or I, you and I were there, that's what I would do. I would, you know, honor and respect the fact that it's a graveyard. Basically, it's an old ancient graveyard. And I guess I would do the same thing at the Colosseum in Rome, where so many people died, you know. And we're going to talk about this, I guess, after the break. But New Orleans and its haunted tourism, you know, and the people that come down here and, you know, and say, oh, and then I went home and all this other stuff. And it was Madame LaLaurie, or they go by Lizzie Borden's house. And it was Lizzie Borden came home with me. You know, it's a whole thing of, you know, just trying to be aware of your surroundings and how easily these spirits, whether you believe in them or not, they're out there looking for something, a meaning to what they're experiencing. And, you know, for many of them, the only way they can understand their situation is by staying attached to a human to try and understand it. So you don't want to be one of those humans, and you don't want it in your house.
Nope.
No. So I think Joe is telling us it's break time already. So when we come back after the break, we'll be talking a little bit more and on a little bit of a bigger scale about attachments, etc. So you are listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network. We will be back after the top of the hour break. What would it look like? All right, we're clear, Dean.
You're back.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network. I am Eileen Castanio and my co-host, Bernadine LeBlanc. Bernadine.
What's up?
She's back. She's still there. She's back. Hanging in there. She's hanging in there, W.S. Lewis, even though we're silly. Okay, we're so silly. W.S. Lewis. Anyway, so we just listened to Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Lucky Man. And today, Greg Lake died a year ago, and he would have had a birthday today on November 10th. So I'm just kind of doing a little tribute to him. He was one of the angels that got me through the horrible hauntings of my youth. Through my headphones, he and Jimmy Page. So gotta love it. Anyway, so we're back and we've been talking about, we spent the first hour kind of talking about spirit attachments, how to get them, how the easiest ways to get them. And we looked at the role of grief, the role of addictions and stuff like that. The role of, not knowing what the hell you're doing and trying to paranormal investigate anyway. And so we were talking of, we're going to move into portals and time slips and stuff like every time slips. Okay. W.S. Lewis, we don't have Basiago, but we're talking about time slips. Okay. So, portals, I'm just going to lay it out here and see what you think, Dean. Okay. I'm so tired of these paranormal shows coming up with this, it's a portal. It's almost as much as they come up, it's a demon.
It's like an orb.
It's a this, you know, or it's not an orb, they're not real. No, but there's so many portals, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, a haunting, the one that's produced by, you know, the oldest one that Discovery Channel does, all the way to, you know, these newer ones. It's a portal. It's a portal. It's a portal to another world. It's a closet. It's a portal. Okay. And I've always kind of had, like, I don't know, you know, portals, they just, you know, they just don't open up. Like, there isn't some tear in the fabric of time for no reason. If you're in a place, like we were just talking about the suicide forest, if you're in a place like that, spirits come and go, and they have done for centuries. So there's, you know, there is something there. There's something passing in and out, because whatever it formed there, the fear manifests, the shadow that the thing is, it comes and goes somewhere in the day and the night and stuff. So there's one portal. But, you know, you open your bathroom closet and it's not going to be glowing and stuff like they do on TV. And I think portal, I'm not as uptight about, you know, when they say demons and they provoke, but just blowing something off as a portal is, it's another sort of, you know, it's cagey. I don't, they're not that easy to form. And long before, you know, you get settled in a house, or even during the buying process, if there is a portal, a psychic portal or a spiritual portal in your house, you'll feel it before you ever realize that it's there. So I just think they're popping up a little too frequently. Well, what do you think?
Well, I have clients that, because they have spirit activity or poltergeist activity, or see different types of apparitions, like a child, a mother, father, you know, this, that, they automatically assume, I don't know why, but they assume their house is a portal.
Mm-hmm. One of them's coming to my mind.
You have to explain the differences between spirits, earthbound spirits, portals, what they really are. You know, I mean, I know they probably have several on this earth, but not as many as people think.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, if they are, they're not, Uncle Joe is not coming through those portals, you know.
Right.
There are, and we'll get right to that in a minute, but we're talking about, you know, your garden variety closet. I'm sorry. I don't mean to diss
the
it.
Amityville Horror Closet.
Now that's a closet, okay? That had a basement involved, and a closet, and a well. If everything is to be believed, so it was a well that was walled up in a basement. And everybody, a lot of questions are like, what's up at the basement? Well, the basement is the most grounded place in the house. We in New Orleans, we don't have basements that go underground. We have like one store, you know, the first floor may be like a garage or a storage area, and then the house starts. But in these places that that build basements underground, well, it's underground. So anything in the ground is going to be a grounding spot for good or bad spirits. So it can be that the closet in the basement, because of its location under the earth, is some kind of a portal, is being used, especially if you have evidence in the house of inhuman, discarnate entities that are not human, evil. You know, so that's a possibility with this under the ground. Same, you know, people say, what's up with the attic? Well, the attic they go to because it's dark and it's, you know, basically the creep factor. Well, they go to the attic to get away. They go to the basement to get away. When they go to the basement, they get stronger. So a lot of times spirits that are even demonic spirits, or let's say devils and evil spirits, they'll go there just to recharge. They'll go under the ground to recharge. So people, you know, spirits have been going under the ground to do that. Vampires, for instance. Yeah.
Well, that's where their elements are. They have, you know, the earth, water.
Earth and water, but earth itself, if you extrapolate a little bit onto that about the significance of earth, earth is significated in the north of the compass, and it is associated with death and the dead and the keepers of the dead. So it's a natural place. And it gets that vibe. It's able to recuperate its spirit. Now I've seen, you know, different specials, like with Father Bob Bailey was on one, you know, different shows that I watch. I've seen them corner. I've seen them actually drive it down to the basement. But I mean, how many shows have you heard where, I don't, you know, I can't go down in the basement, the basement, the basement, the basement. Right. And sometimes you'll hear the attic, but then it's the basement door or it's something like that. And that's why it's a safe place. It's like a safe zone for them. And so that's why when, you know, people are trying to drive out the spirit, they usually do that. If they start at the top of the house, they drive it down into the earth, or they go in the opposite direction where it has nowhere to link. But if something's been down there long enough, in my personal experience, you can come along and build a house up from nothing and still be building it over some kind of a, well, portal, some kind of a gate, some place where spirit energy moves through. That was our house, you know, our wonderful little nondescript suburban house, you know, where you could go to the bathroom and we're so close to the neighbor, you could reach out and shake hands in the bathroom window. I mean, on top of each other. That house was a house from hell, though. Who knew, right? I mean, you can go and build it and things coming and going. So when it's associated with something like that, when a basement comes into play or some sort of, you know, cutoff area like that, or something that's in contact with some element other than the air. Yeah, you know, you can get portals, but I think it's kind of another word they're using too much. They're calling something that's really not a portal sometimes, but there are homes where it may be in the closet, right?
Right.
I mean, there may be. Now, I know you were mentioning one. It may be the wall. It may be, you know, you live in a duplex and something's walking through from the other side because you have a connecting wall. But portals, they're, if you intend on opening a portal, that's kind of like the easy part. And once you do that, then it's difficult, extremely difficult to close. And isn't that the lesson of every little, you know, Marilyn Manson wannabe practicing with the Necronomicon or some, you know,
don't call in the coroners and watch the craft and
right. And they got it on Amazon and they're down in their basement. You know, now they don't know, of course. Now, if you knew what you were doing, if some of these people knew what they were doing, then they'd know why the problems came. Like, so they, well, we had a book and we went down in the basement. We did what it said. Well, and now stuff's happening. Well, of course, moron, because you see, Dean is the one that interacts with all these people. Just want to let you know. But yeah. You know, and she doesn't laugh about it behind the scenes. She just puts up with me. But of course, I mean, if you're going to do, and invariably they want to do demon summoning and they want to do Crowley magic and all this other stuff. But if you make the mistake, if you know what you're doing and you're doing it on the cement in a basement, let's say, or in the garage, something that's a slab against the ground, or you go out in the woods and you do your little thing out there, that's, you've got a very good chance of something happening. If you know what you're doing, you know, obviously, you know what you're doing. So, and what you expect to happen will happen. But these kids, or I mean, I say kids, but, you know, just uninformed people who haven't really, you know, fleshed out in their minds what they actually want to do. You go and do that in a basement with a cement or an earth floor and see what happens. And if you screw it up, that's how you get a portal. That
consequences come with it.
Because, yeah, you just drew, very likely you're using something that told you to draw a circle. And, you know, it's so meticulous that you would think that it puts people off. But what it does instead is it makes them skip stuff. You know, they will buy something, they will come across a really serious book of magic, and then it'll look too hard, okay? So they'll read another couple of books and somebody will say, well, you don't really have to do that. You can do this instead. And they begin to like tweak it in the wrong direction. And the next thing you know, Ralph Sarchi's on the phone, right? I mean, you're calling the man, right? The demonologist to come and help you because you did something really stupid. That's a portal. And a broken circle is a portal. Even if you're doing it right and you make the mistake of breaking that circle when you're in the middle of it or without doing the proper, you know, the chain of command, the call of command.
Or the window blows open and you break the chain, you know, you break the circle.
Well, yeah. I mean, and there's a good story, a cautionary tale. I think I've said this before, though, but it's fun to tell about, you know, here you've got a medieval necromancer or whatever, and he's doing his circle and he's just whispering. He's not commanding whatever it is to be there. And then, you know, he keeps doing it and nothing happens. So he says, oh, well, you know, he closes the book and he steps outside the circle and he's ripped to shreds and taken away, you know, into the kingdom of the shells, taken by the demons because it was there all along. You know, it was
sitting quietly waiting.
Quiet came, you know, you didn't do the right thing. Had he done everything, it doesn't matter if you have no reaction at all. You still do every step of it. You do the banishment, you do the cleansing, you do whatever, the license to depart of the spirits that you have called. But a lot of people, and this is the modern age, they want shortcuts, you know, they want
shortcuts. You better close what you start.
They want to do ghost radar instead of, you know, investing in whatever. They want to get an app on their iPhone to find out if a ghost is nearby. So it's, you know, all this shortcut makes long delays, right? That's the old saying. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so there's a legitimate way of creating a problem and a portal in your house, okay?
And being pushy and provoking.
Yeah. Then they really want to get to you at that point. You know, they're like, yeah, okay, you know, that's fine. And they bring their friends. Because remember, they are in a reality of their own. People don't stop to think about this. Whenever we talk about the paranormal and all, you know, and I put it forth in the book, what they are looking for is not the paranormal. They are looking for proof. This is what researchers, and I know you know this, what researchers are really looking for, and this is how they should articulate it. They are searching for proof that a paranormal encounter with supernatural reality has occurred. Because in each of our reality, we're subject to the laws of our reality. We can't, you know, will ourselves across the world. We're held down by our, you know, our skin. We're, you know, we are simply in the lowest vibration reality, and we can't do special powers and stuff like that, you know. But each reality is not only as real as ours, but it also has its laws. So anything that's supernatural is going to be functioning according to the laws of its reality. And when it comes to the hypercosmic, the really high demons, when it comes to them, the only way that they're interacting, they are used to hearing, I don't even, let's bring it down a notch, okay? Because they're used to a basic format of how to contact them, okay? So that's the best way to say it. Like if you work in an office and you want to route a memo and stuff, there are rules because there's a reason that there's rules. There are things that you can't do, or things that you absolutely have to do, because it's what makes them work in your reality. It's what brings them in. And you don't want a really pissed off demon coming here for no freaking reason at all. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's not a genie in a bottle.
I want the lottery ticket, you know, and you've got, you know, Flauro standing there going, what the hell? You know, what the hell? You brought me over from the 10th dimension or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's not like you get three wishes, you know, you can... Do this to that one that you don't like, and this, that one, and you have no consequences.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's consequences to everything here in physical reality as well as in spiritual reality. And it always scares me because, like I've said, you know, the ones they want to play with, the ones that the unschooled really want to go for, are the really bad guys. You know, they want that interaction. They want, I'm opening the door, folks. It's to the basement. No. I have a dog that is as big as a pony and she must go outside. But they for some reason want it. It's like, well, why do magic if we can't do stuff like that? You know, they're way not satisfied with the sticking pins in dolls and, you know, the Wiccan and it harm none, you know. But
and how do you like these teenagers that call themselves a witch? They haven't been on this freaking earth long enough to even study witchcraft.
I was looking, I will tell you this.
My goodness.
Was looking on Tumblr, and it'll make you so disheartened. I think it was some girl. Okay, I don't know. I'm on Tumblr because of images. I look for pictures for us to use and stuff. And recipe, you know, I mean, I'm not a deep dark or whatever on Tumblr, but there it's a dark place. I can tell you that. But it's also a stupid place too. You get a lot of, there was this girl who's like, you know, she calls herself a witch or whatever. And she was trying to talk about, I don't know. You know, the witch has been known across cultures or something like that. And she just wasn't putting it together. She was basically saying, you know, like, I can call myself a witch, but these people, those are not witches. And I mean, she's talking about like, you know, like the Voodoozy in Africa. There are definitely witches. There are definitely witches there. She was basically saying it was like not a worldwide thing. And so I came back with, you know, one of my kind of pointing it out comments saying, well, you know, and I mean, you know, all of a sudden I couldn't post her on her Tumblr. I'm like, she's probably 18, well, no, 15 maybe. And she's calling herself, you know, a witch and doing whatever, you know. And then I thought about it and I was like, multiply that by like thousands of basically kids who don't know what the hell they're doing, right?
Correct.
They're getting spells off of Tumblr. Okay. I mean, that's like me taking a book on Enochian magic and just cutting out pieces and gluing it together and then saying, here, go do this. Because I hate you and I never want to see you again. And it's going to open up this hypercosmic portal and suck you into the abyss. You know, that's that's what it could be. That's why the book that's called The Necronomicon, there's a little black paperback that floats around. It's called By Simon. It was written by several warlocks, or well, what are now called male witches. But in New York, a coven and some other people who said they were tired of people like we're talking about saying, oh, this is this and, you know, whatever. And I know when I'm 12 years old. So they did that. They put that book out there. And a lot of bad stuff did come from that book because that's the kind of things that they did. They took pieces and parts of really serious magic and they put it together and they said, here, you want to do magic? Go work this. You know, and again, there'll be paranormal researchers forever investigating people who do that kind of stuff, you know.
And you know what's bad is when they do stuff like that where they're living and that's not their house forever because they're just teenagers. You know, their parents get to be elderly, they're moved out, went to college or whatever they did with their life, you know, their parents are living there and all shit goes to hell or they have to move out and then the next people move in, they buy the house.
Yep.
And then they have trouble.
That's it.
It's like, I mean, open something you can't close and everybody suffers for it.
Rental properties are correct. The worst. And you know, you've talked to people who rented and had problems, but I had a rental property I was in for several years and it was a duplex. It was an Acadian style duplex and it shared the wall with the other one. And the other side was not vacant when I moved in, but was shortly vacated after that. But the people that were in that side before the girl that was in there, that she was a nurse and someone I knew, they had a coffin on the porch and they were Satanists. They called themselves Satanists.
Oh, yeah.
And they were doing all kind of stuff up in there. So what did I have to do? I was like, oh, no, you know, we got to protect this house, you know. We protected that house, basically. And, you know, that stuff, because, I mean, what's a wall? You know, it's just going to walk into the other side of the house.
Right.
So, I mean, you got to, you know, you got to think like that. That's the, we're talking small scale now. You're doing stuff in your backyard. But now we've got these big portal things. And my friend on Facebook, Gina, and I were kind of chatting about basically there is, well, I'm sure you know about the CERN, okay, the Large Hadron Collider. I know I've talked to you about that. And what they're doing, these idiots, is really opening like a stargate. They have identified dark matter entities. They have no other way to define them. You can look up the science, any of you who want to, you can look up the science and look up the statements that these people have made. They have found dark matter entities and they found them in the magnetic sphere of Earth. That's not a good thing. That's like a prison riot waiting to happen or something. But they found them, and now instead of just being satisfied with you know, identifying them and find out, poking at them over, you know, several decades to find out what it's going to do, they just want to use this collider and just open the freaking stargate and let these things up in here. Okay. And believe me, no, that is just, so we were talking about that. But Crowley, Aleister Crowley also came up in it. And in his lifetime, a lot of people think he's a Satanist and they say he's a Satanist. He was not a Satanist, not in that regard. If he was anything like that, he was a Luciferian because he lived by his own will. You know, do what thou wilt is the whole of the law. And that was his adage. And he created his own church. But the magic that he practiced, after he left the Golden Dawn and, you know, the OTO, after he moved on and began to form his own magic, the magic he practiced was Enochian magic. And of all of the, you know, there's some dangerous Persian sorcery and there's some dangerous Sumerian stuff and you know, some very dangerous dealings, you know, that fall under sort of like the Luciferian and working with the Watchers and all that. But then that's where you cross the bridge into sort of like the edge of Enochian. Enochian magic, Enochian system was given to John Dee through his scryer, Edward Kelly, who got in touch with these entities that said they were the angels. They said they were Enochian angels, that they were in contact and associated with Enoch, of the biblical Enoch. And they identified themselves of that. And Edward Kelly, the scryer, he didn't really believe that that was the case. He wasn't 100% because of some of the things that they said, and he was right. John Dee was trusting that, you know, these were really angels and they were subject to the authority of Christ and all, and had nothing to do with that. Those guys, those angels are bad. It's, you know, it sounds like just a, they're bad. They're bad for us because they, they're in the chain, or they're connected with our primal reality. They're connected with pre-everything. They're primordial. They were part of something else. They are from, you know, the biblical stories of the fall, etc. There's truth in that. Maybe not the stories that they tell in the Bible. There's truth in that, that there was a rebellion. There was disagreement among God, the God of this universe, and the spirits, etc., the angelic spirits. So they went to work for, let's just say, another guy. Okay, and everybody says, oh, Satan, you know, oh, Lucifer, let's call him that. Oh, you know, what's his name in hell? Well, he has an entirely different name in hell. He's at the bottom of a pit in the abyss, the real thing, the thing we need to worry about, that everybody thinks is Satan and all these other names. This thing is named Charmzon. Okay, that's the name that they call it by in hell. And it isn't Lucifer. It's something else entirely. And those angels are looking to get that thing out of prison in the abyss and bring him into our reality. Plain and simple. They put this crap into the minds of these brilliant men so that they were certain that it would come down and survive until there were people, or there was a person or a group of people who could figure it out and then start working it years down the line. And so we had Aleister Crowley. And 95 or 96% of the magic he worked in his life was Enochian magic. This dangerous system that is basically the key to the apocalypse. It's the key to, if that thing gets out, you know, I mean, and it's down there, and it's down there mentally. We're speaking mentally now, mental images, but it's in a place in its own reality. And the Titans and Tartarus and all these things that in mythology, Hades, etc., that, you know, kind of like these whispers from a darker time, this is what they're referencing. This is the place where these things are going to be let loose on us. So he went into the desert, Crowley. He's like, okay, I know what I'm doing. He went into the Gobi Desert in 1909, and he tried to do these Enochian keys. Okay, there are 49 keys, and we can only work 48 of them. As the angel said, the 49th one, you can't do. We have to do it. So, I mean, Dean, if somebody, you know, some spirit was telling you, you can do all of these except this one I have to do myself. Are you going to, you know, like, you're going to write it down? You're going to go do this? I just can't believe how stupid John Dee was. I mean, he was brilliant, but he had no common sense. He couldn't see. So this thing it exists out there, this form of magic. And so Crowley went out there and he was trying to do it, because he was trying to bring about the apocalypse, because he felt that that's the only way that the world would change and metamorphize into, you know, something higher. Okay, so he's out there trying to make it happen, and thankfully he did it wrong, or it was a failure. But he did something right. And so these days people basically call it, you know, they basically say he cracked a window and let something in, like just a little bit of it, because in short order the world plunged into World War One, developed atomic energy, electricity, communications, all the technology that we are seeing the fruits of now started in that time. And in the 1900s, the 100-year period of the 1900s, we advanced more as a civilization than the 500 prior years. So, you know, and ask anybody, do you think all this technology is a good thing? It's not. Okay. And they're going into artificial intelligence and looking to get spirits into these things. This is where science is. And people can laugh at paranormal researchers, and they can laugh at, you know, at occultists and all this other stuff. But when their own religion, scientism, is saying, this is what we're going to do, those entities are real, we're going to put one of their entities into these robots, and then we're going to just let them loose on the earth, right? I mean, Joe was just telling us on the break, the first self-driving bus got in a wreck within the first hour, right? Are these the people that you want to, you know, opening these shells and letting these things in? You know, I mean, robots, just forget it. So Crowley created a portal, okay, accidentally, and it was a failure in his mind. But thanks to, I mean, man is going to take it and run with it because we're base. We are the lowest, other than the animal life, and sometimes, but we're in the lowest reality, and so many of us are. So we're going to take it and run and try and do, we're going to use our aspirations to make something else out of it, you know, and try and make something good. Then, but anything that we do with that kind of technology ends up being bad. I mean, really, you look at where we are, you know, how'd that work out, or, you know, or how the Industrial Revolution worked out, or global warming, you know. So we really really shouldn't be doing a lot of the stuff that we're doing. After him came a guy named Jack Parsons, and we're getting into, you know, just off into whatever. But he came along and he did the Enochian magic, and he did that crap correctly, and it worked. Okay. And he was, at the time of his death, he was the guy who basically started our space program. He was, they named the Jet Propulsion Lab JPL after, you know, Jack Parsons' lab. I mean, that was the nickname. He was an absolutely brilliant scientist, rocketeer, or whatever you want to call him, but he was also an absolute mage at the magic he was doing. He had a friend named L. Ron Hubbard who started Scientology. And the way he got to start Scientology is because he sat in the circle with Jack Parsons and he was writing all the crap down. And he saw these things that he could manifest, that Jack could manifest. In fact, L. Ron Hubbard, after one ritual, went down to the kitchen to make a sandwich, and there was some huge shadow entity, intercosmic, like hypercosmic shadow entity, that confronted him in the kitchen. And Jack Parsons came down with a sword, I kid you not, came down with his sword and his magical sword and drove the thing away. You know, I wish he would have killed Parsons because we have Scientology because of, I mean, Parsons, I'm sorry, Hubbard, but you know, yeah. These are the kind of things. Now, just that didn't all end with him. That didn't all end. And these are not screwball people on the fringe anymore. The screwballs are in the ground underneath Switzerland, fooling around, looking for the God particle, the moment of creation, coming, you know, really uncomfortably close to creating a black hole and just sucking us all into, you know, the nightmare. And they've got the CERN reactor or the CERN collider. They are trying to open it up. They're trying to do time travel. They're trying to do, I mean, this is like Star Trek stuff that's really coming through. But because they're based, because they're among them, there are a lot of occultists. They are at work on a magical ritual. And yeah, you can have a portal in your closet. Your toilet could be a portal. But when you start talking, you know, we're screwing around with cosmic energy, opening this gate, and we're just not really sure how it's all going to go. You know, I mean, we think it'll go this way, but hey, we don't know. I mean, who are those guys? That's something to worry about. That's a portal right there. Watching what they do, and they post it all on their site, is a way of learning magic, because what they're doing, they're not saying it, because look, they've spent that's their stock and trade. They're rationalist, they're logic, you know. They're like, oh, supernatural, that doesn't exist. Oh, the paranormal, oh, blah blah blah. Okay, so all your witch doctors are over here with this, you know, bazillion dollar Stargate thing, trying to pull in, you know, whatever from the deepest, darkest regions of space. You know, I mean, so we're crazy.
Let's
we're
save the planet.
At least, you know, paranormal investigators are talking to people, you know, the things that actually lived at one time were dead, and they were in here with us, not out there. Out there is bad. I mean, it's like, I feel like Woody Harrelson, you know, in the movie 2012. It's bad. You know, out there is not good. because everything that you'll find in that comes up in this kind of magic and occultism, they'll start talking about the watchtowers, which, and I have a picture in my mind of what they are. They're real in supernatural reality. They are supernaturally real. These are real things in the four quarters of the compass, right? They have angels attached to them, spirits attached to them. And the purpose of the watchtowers is to prevent what is happening with CERN from actually working. But beyond that, and this is as base as it comes, there's an army of angels, of other angels, who are ready to pull those watchtowers down and let the thing out, you know, that God, I guess, you know, imprisoned at the bottom of the universe, that's been down there for a gazillion and, you know, since primeval, whatever, we can't even think time. Okay. So as long as God or the creator spirit of the supernal has existed, it's been locked up too. So, I mean, that, you know, that's where, you know, and I think of all of the people who make fun of us, you know, I'm thinking particularly of a guy that used to run a sci-fi convention. Remember him?
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, now scientists are saying, well, yeah, these things are real. They're clustered around all of our major cities, and they're clustered around our military bases, and we're interacting with them. And, you know, but we're still scientists. So now all of years of occult, you know, eons of occultists are going, uh-huh, you know, and astrologists and paranormal researchers are going, who know their stuff, are going, uh-huh. We told you, you know. So we have no control over that particular portal, right? I mean, unless we go in there, we don't. That's right. We don't. And last year or a year and a half ago when they opened, it was before you joined me. And I was so glad you joined me because I was trying to explain the ritual that they were actually doing when they opened something else in Switzerland, which was a tunnel of all things, but the tunnel was going through like the same mountain underneath, under which CERN is. And it's all centered around the old temple of Apollo, an ancient temple of Apollo in the middle of Europe. Right. But they had this frickin' ritual of, you know, all these naked people and this big head with wings and the conspiracy theorists, or you know, the ones that are talking about the Illuminati, which we should do a show on them, they could pick it all out. They're saying this symbol is that symbol. It was ritual is what it was. It was a ritual, and it didn't have everything to do with just the tunnel. It has to do with the thing that mankind is building that is going to put us in touch with other worlds, that is going to put us in touch. They think it's a good thing, right? Mars is coming, the Martians. You know, I mean, has it ever been? Did they ever look at science fiction movies of the 50s? I mean, this stuff just does not turn out well. But we're stuck on this ball. We're stuck on this globe with these people. And, it's equally as bad. If it's a personal level, if there's somebody doing stupid magic and opens a portal in their house, you've got serious problems. But amplify that to a universe-wide catastrophe. What do we do? There's only one way out of here. We have to die to get out of this game, you know. And so there's portals and then there's portals. And nobody's been able to close the portals that Crowley and Parsons opened because we have just grown leaps and bounds. And what they're telling us has come through, or what they're telling us that they're going to do with these portals, they've already tried. They're not going to say, you know, that we're going to do this if it didn't work. So they're ahead of us. And I don't know about you, but I'm not comfortable with scientists doing occult rituals. Just call me crazy. You know, I'm just not happy with that. Space. Right.
Yeah, people just can't leave well enough alone. They have to just dabble, dabble, dabble until the end.
And you know that's why.
I guess we are monkeys, huh?
No.
Who is the guy in Prophecy that said we were monkeys?
Not us. I don't know. You want to go into that? Somebody, it'll be more than just comments about the first 30 minutes. No, what I'm saying, what I'm saying is the reason in the back of occult traditions, there's a, you know, there's the reasons behind a lot of what I've just talked about that is trying to get into have an impact on humanity is there are several reasons, but one of the reasons is that they disagreed. They basically did not want us to be created in the first place. Okay. There are other things. Now we're just talking like angels. We're talking about the people, you know, the ones they call the fallen angels, disagreed with our with creating us and putting us in. I mean, it's going to be a whole other show, but they disagreed with that and they were cast out. Okay, this is true. These are the spirits. Any occultist knows what they're working with. There's something else out there from where the God of this universe came in at. Okay, like it's hard to explain, but here's the biggest portal of all. The God of this universe came into this universe, okay? And he put us on a planet that was already, or in an evolution that was already evolving that we don't really fit in. We have no business being here. And whatever's out past the real end down there, they're not happy at all. So who are they going to find? Who are they really mad at? Well, they're mad at us, you know, but they're mad at him, God, right? The God. Right. And they're going to come and they're going to, you know, get back at him for what he did. You know, he probably expelled them. You know, now we're off into religion, but, you know, they're in
and
mirrors.
That is that war between heaven and hell
exactly.
That will always be there.
Because there isn't an occultist worth their salt who'll say, well, Revelations is not true and nothing in the Bible is true. A lot of that is true. But a good half of the Bible deals with just the Jewish people's experience with this particular God. That's not my God. Christ is our God. And, you know, and he's the one who's, you know, and I'm not going into preaching, but just talking about roles here, you know, he's the only one who can straighten this crap out. Okay. So, but I mean, this, right now we're all on this, this ride, and we can't get off of it. And if there's a portal that's going to be opened through this, you know, this machine, and they're going to do it more than once and stuff gets in here, we're going to have to deal with this. And just going down, you know, and playing in the cemetery and taking, you know, whatever pictures and all and calling yourself a paranormal investigator is going to be not, it's going to be like a wipey, a baby wipey, you know, compared to the stuff that's going to be required of humanity to confront. So from the littlest portal of somebody who doesn't know any kind of magic that they're doing and, you know, whatever, to this biggest thing, it's out there. And we should have none of this. none of it. I'm going to put on my nun outfit and say, don't do that. So anyway, we're off into... Somebody, like I said, that was for Gina. She asked us to talk about it, but there's more. I mean, we could go on and on and on, and we're not, because we only have a couple of minutes up. So, Bernadine, who we got next week? Our old friend
Pete Haviland, and we're going to have a call-in show. So, for those out there that have questions,
call in. That's right. We're going to put it all over Pete's page, so all of them can call in.
Yeah.
All right, so we're at the end. Bernadine, as usual, they will find you at LSPR. Go ahead.
Yep, LSPR-society.com and on Facebook.
And on YouTube, where W.S. Lewis found us. Please go follow us on Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, everywhere, iTunes. Also found out my books are available on iTunes. Nudge. Yeah, I was like, well, let me try to do this and find them. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, you can find me on Facebook with Bernadine. You can find me all over. Also on the mothership, as Joe says. Yeah, they're reading it up there. They're reading it on a tablet up there. Anywhere, I'm www.ellingpastania.net for now. And then all of my Facebook Facebook, Tumblr, whatever. I'm out there. And I don't only comment on the supernatural, unfortunately, but I would prefer to stick to this. Anyway, thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Miss Kathy Bilski and Quantum Leap. She's going to be getting high like she does every Friday night. And stay up and be spooked out for later. For Terminus, Dark Ambient Radio, tonight is a tribute to Maya Deren, The Meshes of the Afternoon. If you're a film student, you know what I'm talking about. But this is a fantastic movie. It's on YouTube, Meshes of the Afternoon. This is a soundtrack tribute to that particular film. Look for us on iHeartRadio. iTunes said that. We are an iHeartRadio Network partner. And I think I've covered everything, Joe. I'm not sure. We are out of here. We'll be back next Friday. And don't leave some good comments. Hi, W.S. Lewis. I mean, my goodness. So see you later, Dean.
Night, night.
Nighty night, night. Night, night. Did I do everything I was supposed to?